it out. Quietly taking a few deeper breaths, breathing in deeply into your belly, letting your stomach be relaxed, and then relaxing your whole body, your whole being as you breathe out, letting go of the thoughts and concerns you've had of the day, to see if you can relax into being here with your present experience, whatever it is. Being here with your breathing. So the guided meditation I'd like to lead you through today is called the body scan. It's sometimes called a body sweep. And what it involves is slowly, systematically, moving the attention through the body, through different parts of the body, feeling and sensing from the inside what those parts of the bodies feel like. And as we go through the body, I'll direct your attention to different parts of your body. And it's a mindfulness exercise primarily, so it mostly means that you simply become aware of what that part of your body feels like. And there's no right or wrong way of feeling, or there's no need to want it to be different or hold on to it. just simply to feel that part of your body with whatever quiet, mindful awareness as you can. And then let go of it when we're ready to move on to the next part. And some parts of the body might not have much sensation, might be quite numb. And that's okay, just feel the lack of sensation there, just feel the emptiness. And then we move on, just move on to the next place, and maybe there will be sensation. It's partly a training in equanimity, to learn how to be equanimous about the sensations in the body, to not get too concerned about them, or afraid, or worried, or resistant of them, or too desirous, or too attached, or just to let them be as they are. In doing that, develop a real strength of equanimity in the midst of it. So to begin, bring your attention to the top of your head, the crown of your head, and just feel there in your scalp whatever sensations might be present there for you. It might be quite vague. Maybe you feel some vibration. Feel the top of your head, feel it from the inside, from the underside, whatever way you can. And then as if your attention is kind of like a warm water, warm liquid gliding down your head, move your attention down into your forehead and feel the sensations there. And in paying attention to these sensations, different parts of the body, let the attention arise out of relaxing into them. Relax into the sensations, into the body, and by doing so, becoming more aware. And then let the attention come down to the eyes and the eye sockets, and feel the sensations there. Relax into them. And from your eyes, let the attention flow down into your cheeks, cheekbones, your jaws, if your jaws feel tense, simply feel the tension without needing it to be any different. See if you can hold it in a silent awareness that doesn't judge or analyze. Just letting it be there, sensations floating in space. Bring your attention to your area of your mouth, your chin. And then with a light touch, let your attention move itself, be moved to your neck, relax into the sensations of the neck. It's a process of discovery, discovering what the sensations are that are expressed in that part of your body. Feeling the back of the neck. And the sides of the neck. Feeling the front, feeling the throat. And then let the attention flow into the shoulders and feel the sensations of the shoulders. And if the shoulders feel tense, can you hold the tension, feelings of tension, with a light touch, relaxing into it, not resisting it or judging it or wishing it different or having opinions about it, but simply letting it be there as if it has a right to be there, just to be held in awareness. And then let your attention slowly move down your left arm, feeling the upper arm, the muscles, the flesh. Feeling the left elbow. Getting to know the elbow like you've never felt it before. And then let your attention go down your left forearm. Letting the sensations of your forearm come alive in your awareness. The left wrist. And the left hand. Feeling the palm of the hand. And the back of the left hand. and feeling the fingers of the hand. And then with a light touch, let your awareness float to your right shoulder, feeling the right shoulder for a few moments. And then slowly move the attention down the right arm, feeling the flesh, the muscles, the bone, feeling the sensations in the upper right arm. And feeling the right elbow. And then moving the attention down the right forearm, letting the sensations show themselves, relaxing into them. And the right wrist. The right hand. Feeling the palm of the hand. The back of the hand, and the fingers. And then move your attention back up to the shoulders again, simply feeling the sensations there for a few moments. And then let your attention move down to your upper chest. The collarbones and just below them. Surrendering your thoughts, letting go of your thoughts. So you can simply feel and sense the sensations of your chest. And then feeling the middle of your chest, sensations in the area around your heart. And then relax into your diaphragm, your stomach, so you can just feel whatever sensations are there, without concern of good or bad or right or wrong. Just the sensations as they are in themselves. And then moving the attention to your whole abdominal area. Sensing and feeling how it is there. Moving down to your lower abdomen, the space between your hips. Your genital area, simply feeling and sensing how it actually is, relaxing into the sensations. And then feeling the contact of your body, your butt against your chair or your cushion. And then feeling your left hip joint. And moving your attention down into and through your thigh. Feeling the thigh muscles. Down to your left knee. And from your left knee, moving down your lower leg. Your shin, your calf. Your left ankle. The left foot. The sole of the foot. The top of the foot. The toes. And then gently, lightly, move your attention and let it settle into your right hip, your right hip joint. And then slowly move your attention down the right thigh. To the right knee, and then down to your right calf and shin. To the right ankle, the right foot, the sole of the foot, the top of the foot, and the toes. And then let your attention move throughout your body. In whatever way the body presents itself, become aware of the whole body, all the different parts you've been paying attention to. As you breathe in, feel how the breath perhaps enters the whole body, and how perhaps the whole body exhales. Feel the whole body as you breathe in and out. As you breathe in, feel as much as of the body as becomes evident. As you breathe out, relax into as much of the body as you can. As you breathe out, let go of whatever thoughts have appeared while you breathe in, so they can just, you can just be with the felt sense of your body sitting here. Just your body sensations, breathing in, breathing out. And then in the last couple of minutes of the sitting, see if you can notice if there's any silence or stillness deep within those sensations of the body, deep within your body, deep within your being. Is there a place of sacred stillness or silence? Even just hints of it that you can relax into. Settle into the stillness that's at your center. Is one of the ways of doing mindfulness meditation or vipassana. There's many different ways of doing vipassana. There's different styles, different techniques or ways. The way that I usually teach is a little bit more choiceless or spontaneous, in that we pay attention to whatever is predominant in our experience, whatever is presents itself in the most obvious way. But another way of doing it is to do it very systematically, and in a systematic way, kind of go over all the different parts of the body in a systematic way, feeling and sensing what is there. And it's a classic way of doing it. One of the classic descriptions is the 32 parts of the body, pay attention to the 32 different parts. You have to memorize what the 32 parts are and then go through your body and pay attention to them. For some people, doing it systematically this way can be very helpful, especially for people who are out of touch with parts of their body. There are some people that are numb, that are kind of with certain parts of their body, because either because of habit of never paying attention, or often because our physical body is intimately connected to our psychological self, our psychological body, in a sense. To the degree to which we repress or deny or avoid certain emotions, certain emotional experiences, we tend to shut down those parts of the body, because our emotions are expressed and felt through our body. If we didn't have a physical body that had certain sensations and feelings connected to emotions, we wouldn't know what emotions we were having. Emotions occur in the body, in the corpus of the body. So in order to kind of repress or kind of hold off certain difficult emotions, we tend often to cut off those parts of our body where those emotions tend to be expressed or reside. And so that we become numb or out of touch because of that. Some people, it's the energetic aliveness, the energy of the body, which is threatening in some way, and so they'd rather not be in touch with the body at all. You find a whole bunch of different ways in which people are not in touch with their body. Some people are very much in touch with their neck up, but they're almost no sensation particularly. They feel like it's almost dead from the neck down, or from the waist down, or different parts of their body. Some people, it's certain halves, parts of their body. Their right calf is more sensitive or alive than the left half. They don't feel much at all, for example, or vice versa. So then this systematic way of going through the body is a way of slowly beginning to waken up and bring more aliveness back to those parts of the body we're not in touch with. And for a long time, it might be that certain parts of the body, you come through to certain parts of your body and you won't feel anything at all. It'll stay numb or stay empty or no sensation. And then, but with time, as a person goes through it over and over again, and as a person gets better at doing the systematic kind of sweeping, you can actually do it faster and faster. And some people will do it just in a minute, will do the whole body very quickly. And some people might spend the whole hour doing one sweep through the body. Depends kind of what feels right and feels nice for you. But slowly the parts will kind of wake up and become more sensitive, and it's a wonderful thing to have happen. Sometimes when the mind is really scattered and people sit down and don't have much concentration, sometimes having a systematic practice of scanning through the body helps develop a concentration or stabilizes the mind. You can have something to do. You have like a little game, this game of going through your body. And it's sometimes much more engaging than the breath. I mean, the breath, you know, that's not interesting. It's, you know, some people think, you know, so to do the sweeping is like you're doing something. People need to do something all the time, you know, but this satisfies them for a while. So it helps them kind of stable, get settled and get into their body. And then to start feeling the whole body being alive is a very important aspect of Vipassana practice, because the whole body becomes kind of like the field in which the practice occurs. And the beautiful thing that happens is that the field of the body is the field of, is a way in which we actually encounter and relate to the whole world, to other people, to experiences in life. And to have, to discover in meditation how to keep the body alive and awake makes a much more sensitive instrument for negotiating our way through life. The body is kind of like an antenna. The body picks up things in the environment. The body, if you have the sensitive instrument of the body, you can actually know much more what's going on in your world, your reaction, your relationship to the world, the relationship the world has to you, much more than if you're only living in your head. And most of us live much of our life just in our heads, in our ideas, in our thoughts. And if we live always in our thoughts and our ideas, we're kind of spinning and living in that world of thoughts and ideas and having conversations with ourselves and with others or whatever we do in our heads, in our realm of our thinking, we're limited to a great extent to only experience the world and experience ourselves through the filter of those thoughts and those ideas. And no matter how great and wonderful thinker you are, you might be the world's greatest thinker. Sometimes you think that you are, probably, if you're meditating. how could I have gotten so proficient at thinking? It doesn't seem to stop. Anyway, no matter how good a thinker you are, if you're only experiencing the world through your thoughts, your experience of the world is limited. And one way to have a richer, three-dimensional kind of experience of the world is to include the body, way of sensing the world, feeling the world, as part of what you do, part of how you be in the world. So the body is a great antenna. And it's also, the body is a channel, in a sense, for expressing a lot of our innate wisdom, or inner wisdom, or whatever you might call it, intuitive wisdom. Our brains or our being processes things a lot. A lot happens behind the scenes. A lot happens in our processing of our relationship to the world, with relationship with ourselves, that doesn't happen on the screen of our thoughts. You know, many of us relate only to our thoughts and what we think about to a great extent, or just our feelings, what the feelings are in the present moment. But there's a whole level of stuff that goes on kind of in a deeper level than what's happening on the screen of our thoughts. And a lot of that represents some people would say, intuitive understanding of how to relate to the world, what's going on in the world, what's going on with ourselves, how to relate to ourselves. And the body, the physical body, is a wonderful vehicle for that wisdom to show itself or to express itself, or as a vehicle for us to become sensitive to it. It isn't just our emotions that get expressed in the body, in our body. The teachings of the Buddha is that there is actually no real separation between the mind and the body. In the West, there's a whole philosophical traditions which tend to make a very solid divide between our body and our mind, or our body and our soul. And in Buddhism, the Buddha didn't want to make that hard and fast separation of the two. So when he talked about the human being, he used the expression, nama rupa, which can be translated into English as a psychophysical being. Who we are is a psychophysical being, hyphenated between the two of them, psychophysical. You can't separate one from the other. So the degree to which we're in touch with our body, and the body becomes a vehicle for sensing the world and expressing the world, you'll find yourself having a much more wonderful relationship to the world, much more wonderful relationship to yourself. Perhaps more importantly, the body also processes our unprocessed material. Like when we have difficult emotions, difficult experiences in life, the body is a wonderful place to let these things be processed. Or maybe I could say it differently. If we stay out of touch with the body and not aware of what's going on in the body, it's all too easy to develop certain kind of tension in the body. And that tension can stay years and years and years. But if we can become aware of our body and opening up to both the pleasant and the unpleasant sensations there, and simply hold them in our awareness, those which are unpleasant, those tight tensions, will naturally on their own begin to thaw. It's kind of like the light of awareness. It's like this wonderful warmth. All you need to do is shine the warmth on those tensions, and in their own good time, those tensions will begin to dissolve. Gripping of the muscles cannot really survive the warmth of attention. And it isn't a matter of bringing attention there and then manipulating and trying to relax, but simply holding attention there in the body where the tension is will slowly let things kind of unravel. And one of the ways, maybe it sounds kind of mysterious the way I'm describing it, maybe to demystify it a little bit, if you pay really careful attention to how tension lives in your body, you'll see that tension isn't something you simply, you know, you got tense this afternoon, and because once this afternoon you tightened up, from then on out, you know, you're tense. You know, it's not done deal. It's like if I move this bell from here to there, the bell stays, right, unless someone comes and moves it. And there's no more work being made. So it's like that with my tension, right? If I just do this to my shoulders, well, once they're up, and you know, no effort. But actually, to every tension that's held, taught, we have to, and in a very, well, you need a very sensitive mind. And there are people who have done that for us. People who have been willing, who have the willingness to be open to suffering, didn't turn away from it or avoid it. In the process, helped us all become a lot freer. So let's end with a short sitting. To kind of subtly recreate it, to keep it fixed in that way. Is that understandable? Maybe I'll give you a graphic example that some of you have had me do before. If you take and make a really tight fist, and take your fist really tight. Now, it has to be really tight. So even if it hurts a little bit, really hard and tight. Okay, now keep it that way for a while, and I'll tell you the story about how to capture a monkey. You know the story how to capture a monkey? You take a coconut and you drill a hole in it, and you put a candy in the hole with a string to it, and then the monkey brings his hand in, and then it grabs the candy, and then, are you holding your fist as tight as you were before I started the story? Are you? Some of you yes, some of you no. Depends on your will and your concentration. It actually takes a lot of work to maintain that tightness. You can relax now. I think probably most of you have found you had to kind of, you can't just simply hold tight and then, you know, that's it. But there has to be kind of a reassertion of that grasping and holding in order to keep it that tight. So the same thing with any tension in our body, except that most of the tensions in our body are the mental effort, the mental tension that's going in, that's creating it, is often so subtle we don't necessarily see the operating of it unless we're really sensitive. So if it's going on all the time, if we have to recreate it, to re-support it, to reenact it, in a sense, moment by moment, to bring a very solid attention, awareness to it. Awareness itself is not a movement of tension or aversion or clinging. And we're bringing that part of our being which is never clings. Attention never clings. Awareness never clings, never is afraid, never resists. Awareness has this wonderful... non-resisting quality. Anything moves through awareness without any resistance. It comes in and it goes out. Awareness doesn't care what comes in and what comes out, what moves through it. So awareness doesn't cling. So the more awareness we bring to an event, the less we have energy for clinging. And since we're not then actively reasserting the clinging will slowly let go and release itself. The wonderful principle is all things will release themselves if they're given half a chance. Sometimes we talk in Buddhism of the self-liberating aspect of all things. All things will liberate themselves if we bring careful attention to them, if we wake up in the middle of it. So maybe this is a little bit esoteric, but anyway, the body is a very wonderful vehicle for being sensitive to life, sensitive to our lives, and processing our lives. And it's one of the most important aspects of mindfulness practice. So much so that maybe we chose the wrong word to translate sati, the Buddhist word, into English as mindfulness. Because in the West, we stress then the word mind. Mindfulness. And the word sati has no... And nothing in the word sati that has to do with the word mind. It was just a quirk of the English language. We came up with mindfulness. And we could just as well say bodyfulness. And maybe the stress should be not on the body or the mind, but fullness. We're developing a fullness of experience. And the body is very important. And when I first came to Buddhist practice, I didn't know that. I thought that our physical, the body was just something you hauled around with you and you plop down the cushion, and it kind of had to be there while you did your meditation. But, you know, and it was a nuisance sometimes. It got in the way, it felt some, because the knees would hurt, or the body would get stiff, or, you know, it seemed, felt like a nuisance to have this body you had to meditate in. And, you know, if only didn't have this body, or if only this body would you know, not have the knee pain, then I could really meditate. And I didn't know any better, so I kind of toughed up my body and ignored it and struggled with it and didn't like it at times, depending on what was going on with my body. And slowly, with time, what I learned was it wasn't that the body was preventing me from practicing mindfulness. It wasn't that the body was a hindrance. The body, for a great extent, was the practice. It was a place of practice. And the difficulties, the physical difficulties of my body, the pain in my knee or whatever, were not keeping me from the practice. But they were the practice. They were what to pay attention to. And what was keeping me from the practice was the judgment I had that, you know, that my physical pain was not really where it was at. You know, if I was really doing meditation right, if I was a good meditator, I'd be sitting in infinite ocean of bliss and great, you know, waves of relaxation were moving through me and into the whole universe, and there would be this great, you know, cosmic light that would light, you know, illuminate all the crevices and corners of my mind, and, you know, and there'd be peace that was, you know. So I had all these idealistic ideas about what mindfulness and meditation were, and because I had those kinds of ideas, I was kept focusing on those, and I kept wanting to reject anything that wasn't that. So any kind of physical difficulty, for example, well, that wasn't peace and bliss and rapture, so that was wrong, that was bad, get away, you know, and I'd better try harder here and puff more. But slowly what I learned is that the body is the place of practice, a great place, one of the places. It's a very foundational place of practice. And I stopped making a separation between what I thought was good meditation and bad meditation. It was all just stuff to wake up to. It was all stuff to just pay attention to. And as I did that, I started to enjoy my body more and more. And it's one of the, I think, one of the great delights I'm so grateful for the mindfulness practice, is the degree to which I really kind of feel more alive and more sensitive and more enjoying of having a physical body and being in the body. Not that it's always pain-free, I've learned also that physical pain is not that you don't have to. I've learned you don't have to run away from physical pain in mindfulness. But I used to run away from it. I had physical pain, and primarily I wouldn't run away from it by changing my posture, because my early years I was a Zen student. You weren't allowed to change your posture. At least that's what I thought. So in that sense, I would tough it out. But sometimes you can tough things out. Or usually when you tough things out, it's like you're holding at a distance and cramping and tightening up around it, and kind of, there's no real mindfulness in toughing things out. And there's an alternative to toughing it out, which is not changing your posture necessarily, but rather than toughing it out, bringing your full attention into the strong discomfort. And in feeling the strong discomfort, if you're really present enough for it, you'll notice a difference between suffering and pain. And if you know, if you can disentangle your self-pity, your self-aversion, your impatience, your frustration, your judgments, your fears connected to the physical sensation, if you can disentangle it, it's actually possible to feel great joy and bliss and equanimity in the midst of burning pain. Isn't that great? Could you believe it? You believe it? Good. So the physical body, so to start paying attention to it, to be, make it as part, included as part of the body, something we experience and feel. To start noticing that what parts of the body we tend not to be aware of, that we tend maybe to be numb to. Maybe having giving some specific time and focus on paying attention and getting to know those parts, and let them kind of become reawakened, resensitized, and let them reveal whatever's in there that wants to be revealed. The physical body is also a wonderful container, I like the word container, for our life. You know, this small little world of our thoughts. Maybe if we live in the world of thoughts, we feel like the world of thoughts is infinite. because you can have almost an infinite kind of infinite ideas and thoughts and creative ideas go through your mind. But I think what you find if you do a lot of meditation or do something like meditation, you'll find how limited the world of thoughts are. It's kind of like two-dimensional. It's like if you spent your whole life only watching television, and you thought that was your experience of life. You know, you had these blinders on, and you went right to the television screen and just watched. You know, what do people watch nowadays? I don't know. Sesame Street. You know, and that's all you watched was Sesame Street. You know, whatever. It's two-dimensional. And suddenly, you know, someone took down your blinders and led you out the door into the street. And suddenly, wow, there's much more here. I mean, I thought television was pretty amazing. I mean, it's much more than just Sesame Street. There's a professional wrestling you could watch. There's nature programs, and you know, there's all these things. And what a variety! I mean, it's infinite. I could spend a lifetime just doing this. It would be great. You don't know any, but then you leave and you go out. So, wow, there's a three-dimensional world here. How could I have been satisfied with a two-dimensional world when there was a three-dimensional world to experience? So it's kind of the same way with the world of our thoughts. We tend to live in this two-dimensional world of thinking. When we start dropping down into our physical felt sense of being in the world, how we feel to be in the world, how we experience the world much more holistically, it's kind of like becoming three-dimensional. It's like opening up to this much bigger panorama. So the thoughts, what I'm trying to say is that thoughts are really small, actually are a very small container. It's like just like a little television set. And if we live inside our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, our concerns about the world sometimes can feel like they're too much for it, and it will explode, or things will get too difficult, or too frightening, or whatever. But if we can widen our sphere of attention, widen the sphere that holds our concerns to include the body, and let the body be the container for our strong emotions. The body actually is capable of containing any strong emotion you can come up with. And the body, it might be very painful and very energetic at times, but the body is actually a much bigger container than our thoughts are. So I remember one friend of mine who sat a three-month retreat, and he had a lot of intense fear come up in the middle of the retreat, and he didn't think he could handle it. He was really, you know, it was really difficult for him for some days. He was afraid of his fear. At some point, he recognized that the physical fear, the fear he was having, was experienced physically as a lot of strong sensation and vibration and tension in his chest. And then he said, I can hang out with tension and vibration in my chest. And that changed his whole relationship to his fear. And then he allowed the chest, in a sense, or his body, to be the container. Just let that fear be there and rest in the body. And just let it be there. Maybe it's not always going to work for you that way, but you'll find that letting the body be the container for your feelings and your emotions, your fear, your stage fear, when you have to give a talk or something, you'll see that things become a lot easier if the body is the container than it is if your thoughts are the container. It's kind of, the Buddha gave an analogy once. If you take a tablespoon of salt and put it in a glass of water, this glass of water becomes undrinkable. It's too salty. But if you take a tablespoon of salt and you put it into Lake Tahoe, you can still, at least used to be able to, you can still drink Lake Tahoe, right? Because it's a freshwater lake. And that tablespoon is not going to affect this big, big lake. So the same thing, you know, if you put a fear or an anger or something, or depression, into your little glass of thoughts, your mind, you know, it makes the mind kind of a difficult place to drink from. But the body is actually a much bigger container. And the magic about the body is that if you start actually feeling your body and sensing it carefully, it doesn't have actually, from a sensation point of view, it doesn't have actually fixed boundaries. You know, I mean, we say, yeah, this is, you know, I stop right here, thank you. But if I start feeling my chest, feeling the sensations, there's a kind of a field of sensation rather than a sharp line. And so, and actually the boundaries start becoming kind of diffuse with the environment, in a sense, almost as a felt sense. And you become much bigger. And actually you can become, the felt sense of being in a body-mind can be big enough that it holds everything. Nothing's outside. It's so big, the container is so big that nothing is excluded. So to let the body be the place where things get processed and held, nurtured, protected, whatever you need. The body is also a wonderful guide for how to live our lives in many ways. But one distinction that I find valuable is this distinction between mind time and body time. Our mind time varies how fast the mind works, but the mind time tends to be very fast. The mind can be very fast. The thoughts can be very fast. Our desires and our wants and our fears and our concerns and our preoccupations and what has to happen right now and then what has to happen next, and you know, it can just be dizzying in there. And the mind can go very fast. And if we live in the mind, that's all we know. It puts and we're living in this very fast mind time that we can live in sometimes. It puts a tremendous stress on the body. And if we're only living in the mind, we don't notice the development of that stress in the body until the body screams and demands its attention. But there's another whole time to live in, and that's body time. And if you might try, experiment sometimes, maybe on a day off, if you're on Saturday or Sunday or something, and see if you can just notice, if you can kind of sit down quietly for a while and just kind of relax a little bit and get in touch with your body and see what is the pace that your body wants you to live by. And that also varies quite a bit from the different situations, but you'll find that your body actually wants to live in a much calmer pace than the mind sometimes wants to race ahead at. To do things in body time, to do such a thing that you're in touch with the body, so the body's involved with what you do, so the body's participating. Can you allow the body to be a participant, a full-fledged participant, in the activities you do? One of the great, in the Zen monasteries, you get a lot of training in how to include the body in what you do. So many of us, you know, we don't want to do it. Like, you know, how many times have you picked up a cup of tea or coffee? Maybe while you're talking or reading a newspaper or something or driving or whatever, I don't know, you know. And you hardly notice you drink it because you're so involved in what you do, you know. That's kind of maybe doing things on mind time. In the Zen monastery, you're not allowed to pick up your teacup with one hand, especially in more formal times in the monastery. You have to pick it up with two hands. And that's a wonderful thing to do, because when you pick up something with two hands, you're involving much more of your body in that activity. It's very easy to pick up something casually like this and leave part of you uninvolved with that activity. And that's very nice, because then you can be on your cell phone. But then you're kind of split and fragmented. But to actually bring your whole body, let your whole body participate in the action of holding a teacup or a coffee cup, whatever you're doing, is a wonderful training that begins to harmonize the body. I feel it just sitting here with you in front of me. If I go like this, you know, it feels okay to do that. I mean, it's a neutral, it's kind of, what's the big deal? It feels like an okay thing to do. But when I do this with my both hands, I actually start feeling a kind of flow of sensation, of energy, a flow of, I don't know what to call it, that seems to harmonize and bring these two halves of the body together in a way that just using one hand wouldn't do. So to use both, and do that in a lot, in Zen monasteries you do it a lot, you use your whole body, use both hands, you're really there present for it. And so when I was in the kitchen in the monastery, I got a lot of training with this, with cutting vegetables. When I was in the kitchen, we didn't cut vegetables holding the knife with two hands. You know, there's a limit to, you know, this theory. But what I noticed was that I would only use the right half of my body, really, to be really present for chopping the carrot. And my left half of the body would be kind of turned away from my activity, as if I really didn't want to be there, you know, heading out the door already. And I started noticing that, and I noticed that I would bring that left side of my body around to really face that little carrot. Just me and the carrot. The carrot had my full attention. Like, you know, I was going to be there with both sides involved. And it was a training, you know, I kept forgetting. I kept this kind of unconscious almost movement to get out of here, part of my body. Part of me wanted to be there, part of me wanted to be somewhere else. And to come around allowed those two parts to be digested and refined and processed and harmonized. And it was very, very helpful for me to be, for so many months, working in the kitchen in the monastery, over day after day, chopping those vegetables. I loved it. I had to chop a lot. You know, 5 gallons of onions. Wow. I loved it. When I finally had to cook for myself, and, you know, one onion? I wasn't even getting warmed up. No, and it's over. So anyway, so today has been a plug to encourage you to include your body as part of what you pay attention to. Include your body as part of your life. So any questions or thoughts about what I've talked about? Any reports about what that guided meditation was like at the beginning? Linda?
I remember the first time I did this guided meditation with you, which was probably a couple years ago or more. And starting with the top of the head, and I felt nothing in the top of my head at all. I could not feel it at all. And now I can feel the top of my head. So I am able to feel much more of my body and vibration and sensations than I used to. It's really neat.
Great. Coming alive. Yes?
I think it's an interesting topic. I've been trying to pay attention to my body for 7 years now. And I just want to thank you because you came to get the idea. My body's been very tired lately. And what I do is I don't want to pay any attention to that, so then I'm tired one day. And then I go ahead and my mind tells me to go exercise or whatever. And so then I'm tired the next day. And then by this time, like this has happened to me lately, I feel like maybe something really wrong with me because I'm so tired. But it's like I never let my mind never lets the body rule. If the body says it's tired, the mind says, well, if you lay it down, you'll get fat. If you watch TV all day or even part of the day or anything, that's bad. Or, you know, just this kind of thing. So that I personally have been tired for years. I mean, and I feel like it's like I'm going at always at a faster pace, and I always have things in my head. My schedule is in my head, what I'm going to do, what my body doesn't want to do. And it's actually what I'm dealing with right now. So this was what, you know, was, you know, excellent, excellent topic for me. And I have one other question.
Please.
I'm very aware now about internalizing in my body. You talked about putting it in your body, and sometimes I have these things, feelings in my body that make me so tense, and I wish I didn't have them in my body. But I guess they're still in my mind as well as in my body, and you're saying to take them from your mind, put them in your body, and then they have more room to breathe. So my other question, question number two, is when people like my family, my husband, or you know, people around me are having problems, or you know, not so great with me, or something like that, I take that and I put it in my own body, and I want to learn, you know, not to be attached to what others are feeling. Like if I'm having a nice day, or if I'm not feeling well, and I need to take care of myself, and then someone comes in and they're feeling worse, it's like I add it to what my body feels and my mind feels, and it's all, I'm picking up everything from outside. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense. We do, as we become more sensitive, we become more sensitive to what's going on around us and the people around us, both their joys and their sorrows and their pains and sufferings. And then it becomes very important that our mindfulness pays attention to how we relate to what we're picking up, what we're sensing in people around us. If, for example, we feel suffering or illnesses in people around us, it could make us more compassionate, more sensitive people. But if we have a subtler, great aversion to it, we kind of cling or resist it in some way. We don't really want to feel it. We're afraid of feeling it, whatever. Then we cause different kinds of stresses in our own body because of our aversion or resistance. And it's very easy then to not see what we did in the equation, and therefore to come to the conclusion that person suffering is causing my suffering. And actually, no one causes our suffering. We might feel some discomfort because we sense it directly, but discomfort is not the same thing as suffering. And so mindfulness is very important. As we become more sensitive, it's very important to notice how we're relating to it and how our relationship to that person's difficulty digs itself down into our body and causes a different kind of stress in our body. Does that answer your question well enough?
Yeah.
Great. And behind you.
I was interested in what you said about pain, not, you didn't say it exactly this way, but pain doesn't have to be bad. It's our relationship with that pain. Just today I was thinking that somehow I've come to believe that I'm not supposed to be uncomfortable. I'm not supposed to be inconvenienced. I was driving to work and I forgotten my sitting cushion, and it just really frustrated me because it's not comfortable to sit without my sitting cushion. And I was going to be in meditation. I wasn't going to be comfortable, and I've been here enough times to have kick in some responses to that and say, well, you know, you can meditate on the discomfort, but that's so alien for me that I structure so much of my life make sure I have all the bases covered and I have the things I'm going to need so that I don't wind up without something. I'm not uncomfortable, I'm not inconvenienced, or I'm not inefficient, or I'm not, yeah. And I'm wondering if you could comment on that at all. I mean, I'm not sure I know where that comes from. It's very, very funny.
Well, that's what's interesting maybe, is to pay attention to where it's coming from. Not so much analyzing into the past, but where it comes from is something you're doing in the present. So, what is there an evaluation? Is there a judgment? Is there fears that are connected to discomfort? There's a lot of messages in our society that can be interpreted as if you're just uncomfortable, you failed in some way. You're not doing it successfully. Every discomfort is something we should try to fix and make better. We're supposed to always be pleasant, have pleasant experiences and be, you know. And it's a very dangerous message because we can't always control our comfort level. And if we've never learned how to be comfortable with discomfort, we might not be of greatest help to the people around us. You know, if you're someone you love or someone you care about is in the hospital and, you know, you have to stay up with them all night. You don't know what's going to happen to them, and you're going to stay up with them all night, and, you know, and it's pretty uncomfortable. You're sleepy, you haven't had dinner, and you're feeling terrible. And can you be okay with that? So to study, to pay more careful attention, it's great that you see this, to pay more careful attention on what's behind it, what's motivating those kinds of thoughts, what's the values and the ideas. If you can start doing that, I think it'd be really helpful. Yes?
I always have a strong reaction to that, well, let's, you know, meditate on the aching knee. I'm in chronic pain, and so I just, you know, win it. And I listened to the woman that's coming a couple weeks on Monday, Darlene, what's her name?
Cohen.
And, you know, she put it in a different term, which is, I don't know, dead center for me. She's been a rheumatoid arthritis, so authority to talk on the subject of pain. And it wasn't that, okay, you know, her knee hurt, so therefore she'd sit there and nobody would know it hurt. It was the knee hurt, okay, so she'd become really mindful of how it hurt. And then she'd move it. You know, she'd try to very mindfully move through whatever was necessary to get rid of the pain or alleviate it, or if that was not possible, become more aware of it. But it wasn't this, okay, I'm going to sit here and feel pain in a passive victim way. I guess that's kind of how I hear it.
Oh, I see.
I hear you guys talk that way.
Oh, I see.
It's like this totally different thing. That was the meditation then.
Right.
And that's, I've been trying that, and I don't feel any better, but I feel much better about
how I feel. Great, that counts for a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sitting here and, okay, something hurts, all right, I'll breathe a couple times into whatever's hurting, and then I move it. It doesn't have to be a lot, it's not like this, I don't think anyone else would know it, but it's like becoming more aware. And I am finding that now, you know, all of a sudden, now I am aware, oh wow, and just sitting doing body scans for a year didn't give me that awareness, you know, because then I was just sitting there and I wasn't gaining any depth. Does that make sense?
It makes some sense. I think it's very, very important what you're pointing out. One is that it's very easy to maybe misunderstand the kind of instructions I'm giving as being a kind of surrendering to a victim mode. Just, you know, I just have to tough this out or be with it. It's very important to use our common sense and use our intelligence. And if we're really being mindful and paying attention, we could sometimes start feeling, well, you know, what do I need to do here? Is this going to be damaging to keep sitting here with this pain? If it's going to be damaging, we should absolutely move. There's no question about it. If a person's sitting with chronic pain for a long time, and if what you're doing in meditation is not helping, then either you might talk to a meditation teacher. Maybe there's some different kind of instructions you can get for how to bring attention to the pain that would help. Or to experiment with something else if you're looking for that kind of relief. And Darlene offers wonderful workshops, as you know, for relief of chronic pain. She uses some principles of mindfulness, some principles of body movements and massage and different things. I think it's asking too much of meditation to be a cure-all for everything. So we have to use our common sense and intelligence to know what we need to do. However, maybe for you, what you're doing right now is just the right thing for you to do, is to be there for a few breaths and then to move quietly and mindfully, and that sounds great to me. However, if that was what people always did, they would never stay with their physical discomfort and go to a deeper level with it. And there are many, many deeper levels to go with physical discomfort, and not all physical pains are damaging that occur in our body. And when I did Zen practice, a lot of my friends injured themselves because they just toughed it out through physical pain. And they weren't really being taught to be mindful of it. They just said, just stay with your breath and just kind of deal with it. And so, because they weren't paying attention, they couldn't distinguish between the kind of physical pain that was damaging and what wasn't. But in mindfulness, because we're paying such careful mindfulness to actual sensations themselves, you can actually sense or see or feel, usually, what is going to be damaging and what's not going to be damaging. And if it's going to be damaging, then you should always move. There's no question about that. But if it's not going to be damaging, then there are some really powerful opportunities in not moving, but going to, as I said, many different deeper levels of ourselves and experiencing our body, but just staying and developing strong concentration on that physical sensation of pain.
What do you mean by deeper levels?
Well, one is to see the difference. One is to see the difference between our relationship to the pain and the pain itself. And there's subtleties and subtleties of that. So to see, for example, the difference between suffering and pain. And is it possible maybe even not to suffer, even though you might have a lot of pain? And it is possible to do that, because the suffering is extra. It's not inherent in the pain. The other is, another level is to actually see below the concept level of the pain. We feel the pain. It feels like strong pain. But as long as it kind of stays kind of at a distance, we're feeling at a distance as pain, we're not really penetrating the actual sensations that make up that pain, because pain is like this, you know, umbrella word for different kinds of sensations. So what another is to go in there and really feel the physical pain. Is it burning or tingling or tearing or pulling or sharpness or coldness or heat or burning, or, you know, there's all these different sensations that make it up. And then to go in there and feel, and you can go in and feel it. Okay, I feel what it is. Maybe it's all this burning. Then you can go to a deeper level and say, well, can you really pinpoint where in your body that burning is? If you bring really close attention to that burning, you see it's not even in one place. It's a small area perhaps, but it's actually sparks that keep arising and moving all over the place in that 1 centimeter. And you can feel, and it rises and passes. You feel the sparking and rising and passing. Wow, it's not even constant. I thought it was constant when I was feeling it from a distance as pain. It was like constant. But now I see it's on and off, and there's little gaps in between where it's off. And who am I in the gap when it's off, you know, or what's going on here? And then eventually, if the concentration gets stronger, it can sometimes just feel like a very strong vibration. And there's no more any association. You wouldn't even use the word pain anymore. And, you know, there's a lot of vibration. And there can be developed a whole other slew, because of the concentration, a whole other slew of feelings and emotions can arise. Joy and concentration, rapture, delight can arise from having focused so much on the pain. There's also levels of some physical pain, as I said in my talk, benefit a lot from a released physical, deep physical holding or psychological patterns that are buried in our body are really powerfully released when we're able to hold attention on for a long time. And if we take if we relate to it objectively, like from the outside, and treat it as a thing to be manipulated, we don't allow ourselves a deep subjective experience of the pain that allows the release. So, for example, you see people on retreats or in meditation, you know, periodic middle of the sitting, something going like this, you know, this is a sensible thing to do if you're tight. It's, you know, it makes sense to kind of like massaging it and try to loosen you up and all that. But to do that, I'm not saying it's bad, but to do that is to kind of treat it as an objective thing that you can manipulate and change physically. When the cause of the tension here is not a physical cause, but has a psychological basis. And if you're only dealing with this physical stuff, you can feel relief. But relief is not the same thing as release. And the release, the deeper release comes when we actually go into it with mindfulness and allow whatever deeper process needs to happen by itself. So if I feel a lot of a strong tension in my shoulder and feel it for a few moments and then move quickly, I don't necessarily allow for the deeper process to happen. So what you're doing might be really right for you, and I'm glad you said it, because some people here maybe need to hear that's really the right thing to do. But it's not the full story. There's other things to be done at times also. And if I err on a side of, you know, in some direction, I err in the direction which you're pointing out. So you're offering the corrective. Okay, let's have a very short sitting. And whatever you're experiencing in the present moment, whatever you're feeling, Not whatever you're thinking about, but whatever your actually felt experience right now is. Relax into it. So a couple of announcements that